You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Earlier this month, UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, submitted a report to the UN Human Rights Council entitled From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. The report names companies who have financially supported or sustained Israel's ongoing war and genocide against Palestinians and highlights pathways to accountability that transcend legal and diplomatic rhetoric. She calls on civil society to respond to the actions of Israel in light of the limited power of the United Nations to effectively end the violence. The United States has since imposed sanctions on Albanese, calling for her removal for her allegations they say are false and offensive. Exploring more in depth the potential impact of this Economy of Genocide report, as well as the obligation and power of the United Nations as a whole and the New Zealand government to respond to the situation, I spoke with University of Otago Professor for Politics and International Relations Robert Patman, as well as Amnesty International Aotearoa Community Manager Margaret Taylor. Patman has published two pieces recently criticizing the New Zealand government's failure to adequately respond to the US's role in particular in the violence in Gaza. Here is our interview. What impact do you think this report has on the international discourse around Israeli actions, as well as the United Nations' role in the condemnation of acts of violence?
Potentially, yeah, it has a significant impact. Francesca Albanese has been, I think, very courageous in her role, and has courageously pointed out that the Israeli response to the dreadful terrorist attack on the 7th of October 2023 was disproportionate and inconsistent with humanitarian law. And this introduces a new dimension, because I think Albanese has been very forthright, and of course occurred the displeasure of both the United States, which has been complicit in the military onslaught orchestrated by the Netanyahu government in Gaza. What is it significant about this recent report is it shows the degree to which not just the United States government, but a whole series of commercial organizations, including organizations like Google, are implicated and indeed enabling the Israeli policy towards Gaza and indeed the West Bank. You know, there's a natural focus on Gaza, where there's a humanitarian crisis and also a relentless military onslaught. But it should be pointed out that more than 1,000 Palestinians have died in West Bank, in the West Bank area. These are both illegally occupied by Israel under international law, both the West Bank and Gaza. And so I think the Albanese's report is that it draws attention to a number of high-profile commercial organizations that are working closely with the Netanyahu government.
In light of this report, what power does the United Nations or members of the United Nations really have to respond to and tangibly condemn Israel for their acts of genocide in Gaza?
Limited. And let's be quite clear, the United States has now sanctioned Albanese for this report, and there are restrictions on her ability to work in New York. So it clearly has stung, but I think it has placed a certain amount of power now in the hands of consumers, because some people will be unaware of the involvement of many large corporations and companies in what is happening in both Gaza and the West Bank, and may start to put pressure on those organizations to desist or face the possibility that people will simply vote with their feet and not invest or buy products from that company. And that's a serious concern for many commercial organizations. So as a member of the UN or a UN special rapporteur, I think Francesca Albanese's powers are limited, but don't underestimate the power of ideas and the ability to stand up for them, because it's quite clear that the majority of countries in the world, we're talking consistently about more than two-thirds of the members of the UN General Assembly, have voted for an immediate ceasefire since the 27th of October 2023, just, you know, about 20 days or 3 weeks into the conflict there. So it seems to me it's difficult to give a sort of precise answer to the question of how limited will the impact of this report be limited. It could be limited in the short term, but it may play a significant role in the long term, depending on how people respond. It's certainly a warning shot to the Netanyahu government that since a number of companies which have been supporting the Netanyahu government have been served notice that the world is watching them, that has commercial implications for them. It also has implications for the Netanyahu government. But there doesn't seem to be any indication the Netanyahu government will respond. It has contempt for the UN and has basically called at one point for the resignation of the UN Secretary General. One of the biggest problems facing the UN is the fact that five countries have a privilege that no others have in the UN Security Council. And the UN Security Council is the major decision-making body in the UN. Its resolutions are binding. Unfortunately, five countries, that's the United States, Russia, China, the UK and France, have something called the veto, which enables them to block anything they don't like. That is why the UN was marginalised and sidelined during the horrendous conflict in Gaza, which has been ongoing more or less since October 2023.
Do you think the New Zealand government should or even could be doing more in diplomatic opposition to especially the US's role in this conflict?
The New Zealand government, its role has been ambivalent. On the one hand, in the UN, it was one of the only member of the Five Eyes to call for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire on the 27th of October 2023, which was a resolution passed by the UN General Assembly. It was subsequently joined in that endeavour, calling for a ceasefire, by Australia and Canada. So in the UN, when it comes to voting the General Assembly, it also voted to support the International Court of Justice advisory. It voted in September 2024 for a ruling from the International Court to support the idea that the occupation of East Jerusalem, Gaza and the West Bank was unlawful. So New Zealand, that is New Zealand's official position, that the occupied territories are occupied illegally. But your question's a good one, because in principle, New Zealand has, within the UN, it's been quite positive in support of upholding the rules-based international order. But in practice, it is sometimes been reluctant to speak up outside the UN to uphold those principles. It remained relatively quiet, for example, when Mr. Trump floated the idea of Gaza being American-owned and a proposal which implied that the Palestinians should be evicted. It's also been quite ambivalent during the Iran the conflict, but the preemptive attacks by Israel, nuclear-armed Israel and nuclear-armed the United States on Iran. The Iranian regime is appalling, but let's be quite clear, according to US intelligence and according to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, both of those organizations, the IAEA and also US intelligence, believe that Iran is nowhere near having nuclear weapons at the moment. And so when it comes down to international law, the preemptive attacks by first Israel and then the United States on Iran's nuclear facilities were flagrant violations of international law. Did New Zealand say anything? No, it didn't. In fact, Mr. Peters said New Zealand would remain neutral on an issue in which there'd been a systematic breach of international law. So to sum up, it's a mixed picture. And I think there is a sense of frustration that New Zealand probably has not walked the talk on its stance towards the Middle East. It seems to have been very concerned not to offend the Trump administration.
You've made the argument before that New Zealand's commitments under Te Tiriti o Waitangi should hold us morally responsible in relation to human rights in the Middle East. Do you think that that would have any weight on the international stage? I suppose you've already talked about that a little bit.
Well, I think that the fact that this country was founded on a treaty between settlers and the indigenous people, the treaty has been imperfectly implemented. We all know that. But it nevertheless, I think, is an important precedent. And it's particularly important in the context of the relationship between the Israelis and the Palestinians, where there is a number of territories where Palestinians live, which are occupied and being settled by Israelis. I think New Zealand's authority derives from that. It does present a different model of how relations between indigenous and settlers can be handled. But more importantly, I think New Zealand needs to speak up for people who do not have statehood and do not have a voice on the international stage. And one way of doing that is for this government to pick up where other governments have, certainly the Key government, attempted to make some progress. What was the area I'm talking about? Reform of the UN Security Council, constraining of the veto. The Key government certainly tried to make some progress with that, as did Bill English as well. When New Zealand was on the United Nations Security Council, it took steps, which turned out to be unsuccessful, to constrain the use of the veto. Let's be quite clear. It's unacceptable to most countries in the world in the 21st century that questions of war and peace rest on the shoulders of just five countries. That means that five countries can block anything they don't like internationally. And it's the rest of the world that's paying the price for that privilege. And I think New Zealand's position should be to put together or try to lead a coalition of countries demanding that the UN Security Council become more functional, and that means constraining the use of the veto. The veto doesn't necessarily have to be abolished. There are other ways of curbing its use. For example, you could empower the UN General Assembly so that when there's a vote in the UN General Assembly by more than two-thirds of its members, then that would overrule any veto by the UN Security Council. If we think back to October 27th, 2023, there was a vote on that day in UN General Assembly for a resolution calling for an immediate humanitarian truce. More than two-thirds of the membership of the UN voted for that resolution, but that resolution was non-binding and it did nothing to dilute the consistent use of vetoes by the US in the UN Security Council to prevent a ceasefire. So we're in a situation, had the UN General Assembly had more authority, they could have enforced a ceasefire. That is to say, if we had a new rule change in the UN, whereby any measure which commands more than two-thirds of the membership of the UN General Assembly, that should overrule any veto by a single state in the UN Security Council. And that rule change could be carried out. Just think of the difference would have occurred had that been in place at the end of October in 2023. A lot of innocent lives would have been saved. And it's not just Gaza. We have a ridiculous situation in Ukraine where Russia abused its position as a veto-wielding member of the UN when it invaded Ukraine. And it effectively vetoed any condemnation of its own invasion of a sovereign state, which is Ukraine. So at the moment, the UN Security Council is dysfunctional. I think New Zealand's role, which would make a big difference to both the Middle East and places like Ukraine, would be to try to, reinvigorate a campaign to lead to UN reform and make the UN much more functional in what is, after all, an increasingly interconnected world.
My final question for you in that regard, in response to this report, would you, with the limited, authority of the United Nations, would you say the burden of responsibility to hold businesses and financial supporters of genocide or violence accountable lies more with governments through legislative or diplomatic action, or with individuals through consumption choices and protests?
Well, I think particularly with liberal democratic governments like our own, people can put pressure on their government to change their policies if they feel that the policies are inappropriate. You know, problems created by human beings can be fixed by them. There's nothing inevitable here. The UN at the moment has been marginalised and is largely impotent. And that's ironic because in the world we live where problems are too big for nation states to solve, I mean, that is the irony of the current situation. We have five countries in the UN Security Council. They can block any international proposal they don't like, but in most cases, they can't put anything in its place. So we fall between two stools. We can't get international solutions through the UN, and the countries involved, the permanent members of the five, they can't impose their own solutions. And so we're in a sort of, falling between stool all the time. I do believe that the initiative by Francesca Albanese is important and potentially influential. And I do think the consumers do have some, and citizens generally do have some influence if they choose to exercise it. But at the moment, you know, we have a vacuum in global leadership. That's the reality of the situation. We do not have an authoritative UN, and superpowers are confronted with problems that are too big for them to solve, but they're in denial about it. And the idea that you can normalize the situation between Israel and many of its Arab neighbors and not address the core issue, which is the Palestinian desire for political self-determination, it won't work. And the question that I think some Israeli citizens are beginning to ask now, is Israel more secure 18 months into this military campaign in Gaza than they were before this process began? And it's a hard question and is not easily answered.
I also spoke with Amnesty International's Margaret Taylor more about Albanese's report and the New Zealand government's obligations to human rights. Do you believe that this report on the economy of genocide could be influential in shifting global discourse and negotiations surrounding Israel's actions?
Look, I certainly hope so, because it very clearly says that people are making money out of Israel's genocide. So the message is that has got to stop. But particularly it is targeting and corporates and businesses. And corporates and businesses need to know that they are also obligated to uphold human rights. And if they don't, they can be held accountable for human rights abuses.
How do you think the New Zealand government should be responding to this report, which highlights how direct corporate involvement underpins the tangible capacity for violence to continue in Gaza?
Yes, well, the New Zealand government has been missing in action on so many fronts when it comes to calling out Israel's genocide in Gaza and also its apartheid in occupied Palestinian territory. So not only is this report calling on the New Zealand government, amongst all governments, to impose sanctions and an arms embargo on Israel, and that's something that Amnesty also has long been calling for, but this report is calling on them to suspend all trade agreements and investment relations and impose sanctions, including asset freezes on entities and individuals involved in activities that may endanger Palestinians, and to enforce accountability on corporate entities. So it's making some very clear recommendations to the New Zealand government, some of which we have already made to them, and they do need to be heeded. So in addition to this report, Amnesty is also calling on the New Zealand government to ban imports from illegal settlements, as well as investments in companies connected to maintaining the occupation. But also it should help Palestinian people seeking refuge to come here to Aotearoa, New Zealand, and receive support and safety.
I just wanted to ask there as well, could you talk a bit more about some of these recommendations that Amnesty has been making to the government and how they might be able to influence, I suppose, what's happening in this situation?
Well, this government alleges that it upholds the rule of law, and so it should. As a smaller country, it is best if we do uphold the rule of law, and which is why we have consistently called on it to call out Israel's genocide. And we put out a report at the end of December last year. And in 2022, we also highlighted Israel's apartheid in the occupied Palestinian territory. So the New Zealand government needs to show leadership and call out both Israel's genocide and apartheid.
Beyond condemnation or perhaps sanctions even, is there a further obligation of New Zealand and other countries who are members of the United Nations to stand against this genocide?
Yeah, there's many ways to do it. I mean, they must call for that global arms embargo. But also New Zealand is one of the strongest nations in support of the International Criminal Court, and they can ensure that, because the International Criminal Court has got outstanding warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, who is a former IDF leader. They must ensure that, this is New Zealand must ensure that it continues to support the ICC and its calls for justice here. So that's definitely a way that they can be much stronger than they are right now.
How do you think the New Zealand government should respond to US sanctions placed on Francesca Albanese as a result of this report?
Well, the New Zealand government needs to push back as firmly as it can. Those sanctions are shameful and need to be challenged by each and every government, particularly a government like the New Zealand government, which says it respects the rule of law. Additionally, those sanctions have also been applied to the International Criminal Court, and New Zealand was an early adopter of the International Criminal Court and a champion for it. So the New Zealand government needs to continue championing both human rights defenders like Francesca Albanese, who is absolutely extraordinary, and that role is unpaid. But the New Zealand government must also champion the ICC and make sure it's free to do its job without sanctions.
Finally, how would you compare the role of governments in responding to this situation on a diplomatic level with the role of individuals in regard to their power to make ethical consumption choices that recognise the involvement of certain corporations in financially sustaining war efforts?
Well, the point I'd like to make first is that mostly global leaders have been missing in action when it comes to calling out Israel's genocide. But the people that are, it's the people that are showing the leadership in their tens of thousands and their millions. They're taking to the streets and they are protesting every day, every weekend, in very many ways. So the leadership is coming from the people, and they are also showing leadership when it comes to choosing what to buy and what not to buy if it has the taint from Israel. So I think there is a power in having those, I suppose, sanctions that come from the people. But I would also encourage and urge every Kiwi and all your listeners to pick up the phone, talk to their MP today and say New Zealand's actions are not good enough. They need to step up and hold Israel to account.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.